makes noise. Hi, everybody. My name is Dan. I'm always an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan.
I'm glad to get here. I've been thinking about this all day. Like they always say, you should have heard the lead I gave this morning. I know you weren't there, but I hope this one's half as good. Let me tell you how my day started today. I got up about 8:30. I'm retired now. I retired a little over a year ago, and so I don't have to set the alarm anymore, which is a wonderful thing. I got up, I got dressed, read my 24-hour book like I always do, went out and got the paper, fed my chickens, and then I got ready to go to the meeting at noon. I've gotten involved in that noon meeting in Fairview quite a bit in the last year, and I like doing that. It's a perfect time of the day for me now that I don't have to get up early or stay up late, you know. So I filled in for the guy that was supposed to be the chairman today, and I put the coffee on, and we had a really nice meeting. There was a guy there. I'm glad we were there to open the door because someone came that just got out of prison, and he was in there for 4 years. So the doors were kept open for him so that he had a place to go when he came out, you know. And I think about when I first got sober, too, that they... You know, I never thought about, you know, I was just coming in. I was doing what I was told to do. I never thought about all the preparation and everything that goes into making a meeting happen, you know, of opening the door, making the coffee, cleaning up afterwards. All those things I never even thought about. You know, it was just a part of what you people did. It wasn't what I ever thought I would be doing, you know, and I'm doing that now, you know, and that helps to keep me sober. You know, my sobriety date is May 28th, 1990. It was a Memorial Day weekend, and that was when I had my last drunk, I hope. I don't want to talk about my last drunk yet, but I'd like to say that that was the beginning, you know, for me, a turnaround, if you will, in my life, you know. I was born on a small farm out in between Lake City and Fairview, and I ended up buying a house on that same road, and I live on the same road today, you know. So my life is kind of made like a big circle. I went from living there on the farm to working and getting married and having my own house and then getting divorced and losing that house and everything, and then I became a drunk. And after that... I ended up buying that house in sobriety, you know, on the same road that I grew up on. And I'm grateful for that today, you know. And all these things had to happen to me in the way they did in order for me to get where I am today, you know. I wouldn't be standing here in front of you, you know. In fact, standing in front of a bunch of people and speaking in public was something I never did, you know. In school, when I was growing up, they had asked me to do a book report, you know. I would start reading a book, and then I'd get bored, and I'd throw it away or throw it down and never read it again, you know. Then came to the time when you're supposed to stand up in front of the class and tell everybody what you read, you know. And I had no clue what happened at the end of the book, so I said, I can't do that. I'm too nervous. I just refused to do it. I took the incomplete or an F for it, you know, and I never got up in front of the class. I guess you would call me a shy person. I don't know. I just was so uncomfortable about myself and my own speaking ability that I wouldn't do that. So this is a miracle for me to be able to speak in front of people and barely get nervous anymore, you know. But I can remember when I first came in AA and they would ask me to read the creed or the steps or something. I would get so nervous that I would just shake, you know, and I would stumble through the words and sweat like a bandit afterwards, you know. I said, whew, how the hell did I get through that? You know, it was such a chore for me, you know. And but on that small farm that I grew up on, I'm a Slovak. My last name is Pekansky. I introduced myself as Dan Always because that's just the way I did it after I was about a year sober. I wanted to identify myself from another Dan that was in the program out in the West County. You know, people were literally calling me looking for him, you know, and they would apologize that they got the wrong number and blah, 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 you know. So I used Always as a way of identifying myself, you know, without giving my last name, because I didn't want to do that at the beginning. I didn't really want people to call me, and you know, at the beginning. But on that small farm, drinking, both of my parents were drinkers, mom and dad. They were both smokers, mom and dad. And I saw nothing wrong with drinking early on, you know. But just because of the progression of the disease, my mom and dad started having fights as I got a little older too, you know, the arguing type thing and throwing things. And I said I would never be like that. And I said to myself that I'm not going to drink either, because I could tell that when they were drinking was when they always got into the fights, you know. It was pretty easy to see, even as a young child, you know, that that's what happened, you know. It was the alcohol, you know. But as I got closer to graduating from high school, I started to experiment with my dad's homemade wine, with a little bit of beer, and I didn't even really like the taste of beer at the beginning. I thought it was bitter, and, you know, I would rather have had a Pepsi instead of a beer at that time in my life. And, but once I realized what alcohol does to you, you know, I got past that the taste part of the beer, you know. I liked that warm feeling like we all did, you know. I got sick the first few times, but I vowed to get better at it, you know. And for whatever reason, it was never going to be the same for me like it was with mom and dad. I wasn't going to become that angry, disruptive family type thing, you know, like they had, you know. At least that's what I thought. I thought for some reason I was going to have control over it, that it wasn't going to happen to me, you know. But the more and more I drank, the more and more I tried different things, you know. You start experimenting with all the different types of alcohol, you know, when you're a young man. And from the schnapps and the liqueurs and the beers and the wine coolers and the 151 Rodrigo rum I used to drink. I went to Ohio because I lived a lot closer to Ohio than New York State, and between the ages of 18 and 21, I spent a lot of time over there driving back and forth. And even though I wasn't that addicted to alcohol yet, there was times when I would drive home when I would be nodding off, I would call it. I guess I thought I was falling asleep at the wheel, but I was probably about ready to pass out, you know, while I was driving. And there was times when I could hear the stones flying up underneath the car because I was going off the road, and I would snap back to real quick and jerk the wheel back on, and it would squeal the tires, and I would say, whew, I don't know how I did that, how I got away with that, you know. I don't know how I drove all those years without getting into more accidents than I actually did, you know. There was a lot of times when it was scary out there. And early on, you think you're a better driver when you're drinking anyway than a worse driver, you know. You think you're more relaxed. You have better reflexes, and you see better, and that's not true. I'd like to hurry this up a little bit so I could talk more about sobriety. So I started drinking heavily around 21, 22 years old. I was in some bowling leagues, and I played fast pitch softball during the summer at the place that my place of employment. I bounced around with a couple odd jobs and things for a few years before I settled into it's called Irvite Corporation on north on Colonial Avenue off of 26th Street, and I just started out there doing anything that they would allow me to do, you know, and I worked my way up through a lot of different jobs, punch pressing and brake pressing and shears and whatever. We made sheet metal products for the business industry and computers and stuff early on in the 70s. And I finally ended up in a welding position and basically taught myself how to weld, and that's amazing what I did. Got to be quite good at it, and I liked doing it, you know. It was TIG welding. It wasn't MIG welding or any of stick welding or nothing like that. I liked TIG welding. I did that for a long time, you know. I got married. I had a child. That was in 74 I got married. But I kept drinking the way I always drank. You know, I didn't try. I never tried to control my drinking unless I got in trouble, you know. I'll tell one drunk story that I had when I was married. I went to the bowling alley on I think it was a Tuesday. I was bowling a couple of times a week. I think it was Tuesday. And I enjoyed the game because my dad was a bowler. I started out bowling on his team and then went to another team of my own, and I enjoyed it. But I started out drinking my dad's homemade wine and then beer, which is not a good thing to do to start mm-hmm. with, you know. And then after bowling was done, we went to the local bar, and the guys that were there were buying shots, and I wasn't really a very good straight liquor drinker, but they were buying them, so I was drinking them. And far as I'm concerned, that's the best kind you can get is the free kind.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what it was. I was mixing them up, and I got drunk. I remember falling out the door and getting into my truck, and then that was the last thing I remembered until I heard a bump. I went off the road about a mile down the road. I hit a cement culvert and busted the wheel and front end of my truck up and left it there. It wouldn't go, so I left it there and walked the last half mile home in the wintertime. And went in the house like nothing happened, you know. And it was probably about 1 o'clock in the morning. And the wife was sleeping. She didn't know. But about a half an hour later, there was a knock on the door, and the local policeman came and wanted me to move my truck off the road. It took me a long time to figure out how the hell he found out where I was at, you know. He followed my footprints through the snow, you know. How hard is that? We went back to the truck, him and I, and I was still drunk yet. And it wasn't until I got back there that I realized, oh, holy shit, he's going to arrest me for drunk driving. So I said, I'm getting out of here. I have to go home. And I ran away from him, you know, literally. Ran away, you know. And he's chasing me down the road on foot, and then he turns around, goes back, and gets a car, you know. And I know now at that point I can't go back to the house because he's going there. So I cut down through the woods and I started sneaking around through the neighborhood and stuff. I call it my fugitive story, and I used to tell that in the bars afterwards, you know, that they were trying to catch me for hours. You know, I was hiding behind trees and cars and everything, you know. It was crazy. I ended up running from Lake City to a greenhouse about 3.5 miles down Middle Road toward Fairview, because I thought I was going to hide out in the greenhouse, because I worked part-time there, and I knew I could sneak in the back of the greenhouse. You know, I thought it was going to be warm enough in there to just hide out there all night, you know. Well, they turned the thermostats down in the greenhouse at nighttime to about 50 degrees, and I was all wet from running through the snow and stuff, and it wasn't working for me. I started to freeze to death. I was shivering, and I didn't know what the hell to do. So the only other place I could think of going was my dad's house, which was part of the way back toward Lake City, and I walked over there and banged on the door until he finally let me in, and I passed out on the couch. I found out later from my wife that the local cops and the state police were looking for me. They said they were concerned about my welfare. But I think they were trying to arrest me. They never found me. So I called up the garage the next day from my dad's house. I never went home right away. and told them to pull their truck back to the garage and start fixing it, you know. I'll pay you later, no problem. The following day, I went back home, and you're not going to believe this, but the wife wasn't talking to me. She literally didn't talk to me for about a month. Not a word. I heard from my brother-in-law and my father-in-law that it was true that the state police were looking for me too that night, and they never came and got me. I don't know why. No proof, I guess. No evidence. God, I would have been sober by then, you know. But that was long before I thought I had a problem with drinking. Somewhere around the early part of the 1980s, I was trying to control my drinking, you know, on a daily basis. You know, I'm only going to have one beer today and maybe one tomorrow. but I couldn't do that. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm always going to be an alcoholic, and I know that now, but I didn't then. That once I start, it's going to be hard to stop. You're going to want more. It's a disease of want, and that's what I have. I'm addicted to most of the things that I try in life, you know. I do believe that I was addicted to bowling, too. I believe that I was addicted to any game that I wanted to play because I intended on being the very best I possibly could at everything I did, you know. And that was my goal. If you want to call that a goal in life, that's all I had. I didn't appreciate my own family and my daughter. My daughter was born 3 years after I got married. And I used to wait until my wife came home from work on Friday so that I could go out, you know. She worked in a bank as a teller, so you know how the bank has longer hours on Fridays. Well, I was chomping at the bit waiting for her to get home so that I could get out, you know. And she started to resent that a lot toward the end. And we started having those fights that I said I was never going to have, you know, me and my wife. And when it got to the point where I started pushing a little, because she was pushing, we decided to have a trial separation is what we called it, to see if we could live without each other. And guess what? I did real good with that. And I thought I got my freedom back. I thought that I was going to be able to drink as much as I wanted to, as long as I wanted to, anytime I wanted to, as long as I went to work the next day. That was my prerogative, you know. Well, that gave me so much freedom that I started to get drunk all the time, you know. After bowling, after softball in the summertime and everything, you know. And then I started running, too, and I was running from the early 80s and until past 2000. Before I could, my knee gave out on me. I couldn't run anymore. But I really enjoyed that, too. For some reason, it just, like, cleared up my head. It was the only thing I had at the time to clear my head of the stress and of work. And it wasn't that much stress. It was just all in my head, you know. The daily bills, the, you know, fixing the car, fixing things at the house. Those all seemed to be stressful to me at the time, and that's just normal stuff, you know. But I got my first DUI in 1989. I was drinking at a bar. I was already divorced from my wife for 2 years. I was drinking at a bar in Girard, and I went to breakfast. I walked over to breakfast from there. And then I had some coffee and breakfast, and then I decided I was going to go home, and the cops stopped me going out of town, you know, and I said, I couldn't even figure out why they were stopping me, you know. I told them, I just came from the diner, and I had coffee and breakfast. And he said, well, you seem to be driving a little slow or something, so he said, you know. I said, what are you talking about, you know. But anyhow, they did the breathalyzer thing on me, and I was over the limit. You know, I wasn't very much over the limit, but enough that I got my first DUI. And then, you know how your first one goes, you get the ARD program, you don't admit your guilt, you know, and you're put on probation for a year and lose your license. I think I lost my license for 30 days or something like that. And I laughed that off as a joke, you know, that that just wasn't supposed to happen, that it was just unlucky on my part, you know. And I used to take my younger sister with me to the drunk driving school because I let her be my significant other that you have to have, you know. Mm-hmm. And we used to drink together and go to dances and things together. We liked to dance, and so did she. And we used to go to the bar and drink after going to the drunk driving school, you know. Made a lot of sense, huh? But we'd only have one or two so that we couldn't get arrested, you know. Yeah, but that, you know, I abused it. I kept drinking on ARD, and I was almost off of the ARD when I got popped the second time, you know. I was, if I would have been another month more, I wouldn't have got tried for, I got tried for both offenses at the same time. They revoked the first one, and I got two DUIs. Both times I was not in an accident. I was just drunk and driving, you know. So I'm grateful today that there wasn't any accident, that no one got hurt, and I didn't even hurt myself, you know. I was just drunk. Went up in front of Stephanie Dimitrovich about 6 months later, and I got 2 years probation, 2 years loss of license, and I was told to attend Alcoholics Anonymous right after my second arrest, you know. So it was Memorial Day weekend, like I said, when I had my last drunk, and I went to a stag party. It was a stag party and graduating from college party. There was two people that put this party together, and they had a whole truckload of kegs of beer, you know, and it was at the Parker White Pavilion behind Parker White Mental, and they had horseshoes and volleyball, and they had a live band, believe it or not. And I was in heaven. I thought that was the best thing that ever was, you know, food, all for one cost, you know. And it wasn't very much either, you know. They didn't make any money off of that deal. And I drank all night long, you know, all afternoon and all night. And I ended up driving back through Girard again and got arrested for that second DUI. My intent was to stay there. I had a sleeping bag and a big heavy coat that I was going to wear, you know, and just sleep in the truck, you know. It was not going to be a problem. But I don't know why. My mind wasn't where it was supposed to be, and I guess I thought I was going home, you know. And I was really drunk. I don't even know how I got to the truck, let alone drove. You know? It was crazy. So I ended up throwing up in the wastebasket at the state police barracks on that second DUI. They didn't like that. They made me take the wastebasket out to the dumpster, you know. Armed guard. The policeman walked me out there and dumped it out, because they weren't going to smell that all night long, you know. So anyhow, I got my second DUI. Like I said, I started in AA before I went in front of the judge. And so I've already was about, June, July, about 5 months without a drink before I went in front of the judge. And I got put in jail for a little while. Most of the people were getting 90 days on work release and things like that at the time. And because I paid my lawyer a pretty good chunk of money, I got 7 days in jail without getting out, you know, 1 week. And then I was out. I was so excited about getting out of that jail that I walked halfway home to Lake City from Erie. I finally got tired of walking, and I went over to a guy that works at our shop and asked him to give me a ride home. But I wouldn't wait for anybody. I was gone. As soon as they told me I was gone, I was out of there. So that was a great eye-opener for me, an example that I just don't want to go back and do that kind of stuff again. You know, I don't ever want to live through that pain anymore, the hangovers, the looking the judge in the eye, the closing of the door behind me in jail, the strip search that they give you in jail. I couldn't believe that. It was amazing. And I promised myself that I would never do that again. And when I started going to AA meetings, my first meeting with the Dobbs group out in Fairview, I just loved it. You know, the people were very friendly, and for right from the day one, it seemed like this was the right thing to do. It wasn't that I was trying whatever, you know, and they just kept saying the same thing: don't pick up the first drink and go to meetings. So I did that. You know, I was a little reluctant about. I never did 90 meetings in 90 days, and I apologize to the new people for that, because that's what they're making them all do now. You know, I went a couple of times a week, you know, Thursdays and Saturdays at the beginning. I was going to drug and alcohol counseling in Girard, and I learned a lot about myself early on that I never knew, you know, about my obsessive compulsive behavior, my perfectionism, my addictive personality, how I would become restless, irritable, and discontent real easily when I drank. You know, I never knew all those things. I was so ignorant about life and myself that it's amazing. I don't know how I got through the. I was 43 years old when I got sober, and I lived those first years of my life very naive, unknowledgeable about things. You know, and. That's the most important, some of the most important gifts that I've been given in AA is that understanding of everything, you know, of what's really important in life, you know. I remember the drug and alcohol counselor saying, what's the best thing that ever happened to you in your life? And this is the answer that I gave. I bowled a 300 game once. I'm very embarrassed now about that answer. I didn't mention my marriage, my daughter, nothing. I said, I bowled a 300 game. Okay. Thank you, God, for what I know now. So anyhow, I moved out into a small trailer. Oh, the trailer was before my last drunk. I moved back in with my dad when I lost my driver's license in 91. And this is the truth. I moved back to my dad's house so that I could be closer to meetings. There was a meeting in Girard. There was a meeting in Fairview. There was a meeting in Lake City. There's three meetings a week I could go to walking if I had to. And I did a lot of walking and bicycle riding and jogging to these meetings, you know. They started a meeting out in Springfield and Jim Janke and Andy Honnard were giving me rides out there when I had no driver's license. So I was going to Monday out there, Tuesday men's group in Girard, Wednesday men's group in Lake City, Dobbs group on Thursday. I usually miss Friday because I went bowling on Friday. Yeah. Saturday I went back to Girard again. You know, Sunday morning I went to Willow Run. So I could go to a meeting almost every day. You know, they didn't even have a noon meeting then. That I knew of, and they might have had it at the club, but that was too far away, you know. So in a short period of time, by the time I lost my driver's license, I was going to a meeting almost every day of the week, and partially because I wanted to get out of the house where my dad was. He was still drinking. I was living with my dad, and after I got my driver's license back in '93. I'd saved up some money, naturally, because I'm not driving, I'm not spending money on gas or insurance or any of that, you know. I had a little money in the bank, and I was still paying my dad rent, you know. And I had that mobile home out in Springfield that I owned. I ended up selling that when that house came available on Fair Plain Road in '94. I bought the house. I offered them less than what they wanted for it, but I was still the higher bidder. you know, and I ended up getting a house. And I didn't realize how much work I had involved to get it back in shape. It needed a lot of work, and it's in fairly decent shape now. around the year 2000, I met a lady out in McCain. Remember when the McCain meeting used to be really huge?
Oh, yeah.
And they would have almost 100 people there on a Monday night, you know, in McCain. And I ended up going out there, and I knew Cliff Craze from the bowling. I started bowling in the AA bowling league. Cliff Craze was a bowler, and I was sitting next to him. And he was giving a girl a ride from Erie out there every Monday, and Lee is the girl. And we just started talking, and blah, blah, you know. And then I started taking her to a meeting on Saturday night because she wanted to go where her sponsor was. We just started, I guess you'd call it dating, once a week, twice a week. And she still lives in Erie, and I live out where I live, you know. And it's just a friendly relationship that's been very good for us both, I think. She gets to go to more meetings. I take her grocery shopping because she can't drive, and it's a nice, comfortable relationship. All those things that I started doing early on in AA, all were beneficial for me to be who I am today. I got involved in the Harvest of Hope early on. I was on the committee for 8 years in a row down there, and I enjoyed that too, you know. But it started to conflict with the, it seemed like I was doing more and more and more work and enjoying it less, you know, after a while. And I still go to Harvest of Hope, of course. I'm just not on the committee anymore. And it always seemed like we started bowling on a Friday night. We bowl at 9 o'clock on a Friday night. And it always seemed like the Friday night bowling league started the night before the Harvest of Hope. And I had to be down there at 8:30 in the morning to start setting up and putting the coffee on and all that stuff. And it got to be just a little too much for me, you know. So I passed it on to someone else, you know. Other things that I've done, I was the secretary treasurer of the Dobbs Group for a couple years. And whenever people ask me to lead, I do. Most of the time, unless it conflicts with something else in my life, I don't have a problem with that now. I'm more comfortable about talking about myself. You know, that was always seemed like an embarrassing thing to do, you know, to tell everybody what really went bad, you know. Well, anyhow, my ex-wife and my daughter moved down to Florida, you know, after the divorce. And my daughter now is married. She went to, graduated from college, and so did her husband. And then he tried some different jobs first, and then he ended up joining the Navy like his father. He got a pilot's license first in Pensacola, and that's where my daughter graduated from college. And then he went on to Mayport in Jacksonville and became a helicopter pilot, and he still is. Now he's a lieutenant commander in the Navy, and they just recently moved to San Diego, California. And they're going to be there about 3 or 4 years, I guess. And I have 3 grandchildren now. Jameson, Gage, and Mason. And Mason is a girl. And I love the heck out of them. They're wonderful little kids. And I got to see them the last year, more than once, but the last year before they moved to San Diego last October, a year ago in October. And they're growing up fast, you know. The oldest one is 6 now, 6 and a half, something like that. And I realize now that, you know, when I was a drunk, I wasn't concerned about all these things, but how much of a blessing it is now to have those grandchildren, you know. So, like I said, I've gotten involved in that noon meeting in Fairview. If you ever want to come out, we're there 6 days a week at noon in the basement of the church now. They tore down that other older building that was there a few months back. But it's nice and comfortable down there. Come join us. But my life has gotten so much better. You know, I fixed up my house. I live alone. I have chickens. I don't have dogs or cats. I have chickens. So, and that's what I wanted. And let me tell you the story about the chickens. See, we used to have chickens when I was growing up on the farm. And I was the one that ended up feeding and watering them all the time, every day, you know. But the problem was when I'd come home from school sometimes, some of the chickens would be gone. And I didn't like that, you know. And I knew where they went. They went in the freezer. So I still eat chicken today, but not my own. They're going to die of old age. And that's just the way it's going to be, you know. I had a little resentment about that, let's say. Life is good to me because I do two things. I don't drink. I go to a lot of meetings. I talk to people. I get involved in AA events, you know. Like I said, I bowl in the AA. We can't call it the AA bowling league. The sober league. And I started playing golf about 7 years ago, and I didn't know how to play golf. And I still don't play very well, but I like getting out there. It's beautiful out there in God's country, you know. So those are some of the things that I've done in order to maintain my sobriety, you know. And I don't know how many times I've done this now. I used to keep track, you know, but I know it's more than 50 or 60 times that I've done this in. Since my first lead was in the Girard Tuesday men's group, and I was about 2 years sober before I gave my first lead, because I kept telling them, no, I can't do that, you know, because you remember how I told you how nervous I got in front of people? It was that way until I was 2 years sober, you know. Finally, I broke down and did it. Very grateful that I did, you know. There's something so beneficial about telling your story, releasing your fears, your anxieties, and just staying sober, letting it happen, you know. And it's all about the fellowship, and I love the fellowship now. We've gone to some out-of-the-way meetings like Possum Lodge. It's the North Richmond Church, and it's down, south and east of Cambridge Springs. Yeah. It's an out-of-the-way place, but they have a hot dog cookouts in the summer, and I like going out there and hot dog cookouts. I think it's the third Tuesday of every month, isn't it? Yeah, something like that. If you've never been there, you got to go there, you know. And I enjoy the eating meetings, okay? We got another one coming up 2 days from now in Lake City if you want to join us. The men's group is having an open eating meeting. They're having ox roast, pop and coffee provided, and bring a covered dish. We'll have fun if you want to come out. It's at the Grace Episcopal Church at Lake Street and Hall Avenue, right by the railroad tracks in Lake City. I think I talked long enough. I hope I explained my situation the best I could. And now you know why I'm always an alcoholic. Thanks.